What was it like to hear about the JFK assassination? Or America's triumph over Hitler? We're seeing Queen at Live Aid. Our past is a collection of stories that bring us to now. Welcome to the Eyewitness History Podcast, where we view history through the eyes of the people that watch the events that shaped our world. Here's your host, Josh Cohen, and these are their stories.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Today we have the distinct honor of sharing the remarkable story of Margherita Bettola Frey, one of the last living heroes of the Italian resistance during World War II. Raised in an anti-fascist family, Margherita bore witness to the tragedies of war, bombings, and brutality. Her journey led her to become a partisan, fighting alongside the Garibaldi Brigade in Turin. Margherita's courage and resilience in the face of danger and adversity are nothing short of inspiring. Today we bring to life a narrative of heroism, sacrifice, and the enduring human spirit. This is a tale that deserves to be heard, and we're honored to bring it to you today. And now I bring you Margherita Frey.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-218-6010. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-218-6010. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-218-6010.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Okay, I'm here with Margherita Frey. Margherita, thank you for joining me.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to speak with you. I'd like to wind the clock back right at the beginning, if I may. Please tell our listeners about your childhood in Turin, in Italy.
Well, I grew up under Mussolini, and it was a wonderful school. It was very serious about respect. You know, you had to obey. So I grew up really wonderful. You know, I learned very young how to go on in life and respect people. That the thing Mussolini used to expect from all the children. And I went to the wonderful school, really good school in Torino.
Awesome. Thank you. Now, as I understand it, Margherita, your family was against Mussolini and suffered as a result. I believe your father was a tax collector and he was later forced out of his job. Could you please talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, my father had a nice job. He was a collector of taxes. He had his own office, everything okay. But he was very good at saving money. He saved enough money to build a beautiful villa. And the thing is that they didn't agree with the fascists because they start talking about my father, saying that he stole money, that he did something wrong. And my father, he was gonna make a good jail, but my father had the second book that he kept of all the things that he did in his life. He had a copy of everything. And so when he showed that in the court, they said he didn't do anything wrong. So we go on with our life. But my father sold the villa that he built, and we moved downtown in Torino, and we opened up a bread company, you know, like that. I remember I delivered bread on the buildings and all kinds of stuff. I ate a lot of sugar and a lot of candy.
Excellent. Thank you. So what was it like exactly when fascism began in Europe, when in northern Italy, where were you when the Nazis came and occupied?
Well, that was in 1943 that I joined the underground because, you know, it was getting pretty bad in there. And then the German, we had, in my city, we had 30,000 German and it was almost impossible. We couldn't move, we couldn't do anything, you know, and lots of people get killed, and so I joined the partisan, and lots of the partisan then got killed during the 43, 44, and 45. So I got lost in what I was saying. Yeah, I was just 17 years old when I joined a friend of the family, he became a commander, and he told my mother and father that it would have been nice if I could have helped out. I decided I wanted to do something for Italy, so I joined the group. I was in the Garibaldi Brigade, and it was one of the first group that they made in Torino. I was one of them.
Excellent.
Big job. You know, my bicycle, I deliver first ID for the Jews, you know, that they was in big trouble, you know, that the fascist was after them. And I deliver all the secret paper between, I think it was from the U.S. and the partisan. I don't know, because I was not allowed to read any of that stuff. Just I delivered. It was very scary because, you know, many times I had to throw my bicycle in the bushes and hide as much as I could, because if I hear a truck of the German coming and they spot me, they kill me. They even with no reason, they could have just shot me, you know. So I am thanks every day that I'm still alive. I made.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. Thank you. So perhaps just to backtrack for a moment, if we may, Margarita, just for our listeners, who exactly were the partisans?
Well, we had men, but then the woman, you know, we joined. We had many women join. In fact, you know, they even wrote a book about the woman who liberated Italy from the fascists. And there is Ada Gobetti, all these famous women. I don't have my name in there because I came to Italy and they wrote the book after. But they recognized all the help that the woman did. You know, we helped out. We opened up like the door to the partisan from the top of the mountains, you know, to the Alps. They were hiding in there. And then when the German really attacked, we managed to have them evacuate and go. And so that's what they say, we liberate Italy from the fascists, because we did lots of work hiding. And I think we did a lot of help for the war at the end of it. In fact, you know, with the end of the war in Torino, everything stopped. You know, the war finished. After 3 years that I was in it, finally we were liberated. Bicycle every day. The German, they make me witness killing lots of partisan, and they used to stop me. One time they stopped me and they hold me and they made me watch them killing two boys. And then they told me, now go, go, go. You know, they tell me to go. So I got on my bicycle and I kept driving down the street, and then they start shooting after me. And I was just lucky that I made it home. Just very lucky. I guess they lost me. They couldn't find me.
Wow. That's extraordinary, Margarita. Thank you. I'd love to ask you, it may sound like a silly question after what you just told me, but I'd love for you to dig in with our listeners a little bit and talk about some of the most dangerous missions that you undertook as a member of this Garibaldi Brigade.
We used to get called, you know, I have a truck, and the front pages of my book, I put the picture of the truck that we used to drive into it to go to help the partisan in trouble. And, you know, the German, they used to go way up on the top of the building. And then the partisan, they were downstairs, you know, in the courtyard, and the Germans shoot at them, so they get injured. So I got the Red Cross, like I learned about the Red Cross. So I used to do emergency. I used to go in and pick the wounded partisan for the courtyard and pull them out by their feet and pull them to shelter so we could do first aid. And so I always had somebody there with a truck ready in case we had to rescue them like that. And sometimes we used to go, we get called, you know, to go far away to help some partisan. And one time we got in a truck and we had two partisan in the back of the truck. And we were going to bring some help in Moncalieri. And when we got half of the way, the Germans spot the truck and shot. And so they shoot the two guys in the back of the truck and they fell out. So we could not help anybody. We had to just turn back and hide. It was really drastic, you know, horrible. Plus, when we were doing that sometime, the plane come in and they start bombing. And so we had to find shelter. It was, I know what they're going through in Russia and in Ukraine because I've been through that. And I feel so sorry for them people.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You know,
of course, certainly. You mentioned it already, but do you think you could talk about some of the personal losses that you suffered as a result of your role in the partisans?
You know, some people being a partisan, you know, some of my friends, they still used to go out to dance and do stuff. The movie were on, theater was on, you know, but being a partisan, I had to change my life from a teenager into a real serious person. I didn't have time to go fooling around with my friends, you know. Even the school, I went to a fantastic school in Torino, the Maffei, and I have a book that they wrote, the Maffei, they wrote the book, when they come to 43, 44, and 45, you know, they said in the book that a lot of their students, they were partisan, but they were not allowed to know. And if they know, they were not supposed to say their name. So I was one of them. I was scared all the time because then I know that the German, they were watching for the young kids that they go to school, that they were spy or this or that, you know. So even in a way, going home from work, you know, it was very serious because they watch you from when you get out of the class. And then, you know, the fascists, they watch you where you're going. They tried to stop me and put the guns on my side. And the president of the school came out and told the fascists, they said, leave this girl alone. She's a nice girl. She works with the school and everything. And so they finally let me go. But I got very close calls. Like I said, it's a miracle that I'm here. I say thank you, God, every day.
Yes, yes, indeed. Well, it's funny. That was actually going to be my next question, Margarita, is if there was a particular event that stands out for you as your closest call with the partisans.
Well, the closest call is the one that they shot these two guys and they shoot after me. You know, that was very close. I got home and my mother said, what's the matter with you? And I said, I cannot tell you. I cannot tell you. You know, I feel the noise of the shot coming right next to my body, you know. I don't know what happened that time. Maybe my bike swiveled around and I went through it and I made it. It's just incredible. I always thought that I felt pretty bad that my mother let me do something like that because I could have died so easy.
Yeah.
A 75 girlfriend of mine, they killed them. You know, they shot them in the piazza and then they put a rope around their neck and they hang them under the balcony and the street. Can you believe it? You walk down the street and you see the body of girls hanging. I don't think no other eyes saw what I saw. You know, it's terrible. And now, you know, somebody else is going through this again. It's really bothering me.
Yeah, it's horrible.
You know, and I just find out that somebody that was against the war now, this guy about 68 years old, I think they killed him because he was against the war. Isn't it awful?
Wow.
It's a terrible thing.
It is. It is.
I don't know why that we are so weak. We should just get together, everybody in this earth, to try to stop these people from trying to kill people, you know? Trying to kill innocent people, children, and everybody. Oh, yeah. And I didn't tell you that I married an American soldier.
Yes.
Yeah. And I married him, and he was an alcoholic since he left the war. You know, he did Africa campaign, and he did all Italy. And then he found me, and he came back to marry me. He only lasted about, you know, at 49, he died because of the hardcore. But he didn't want to talk about the war. Every time he said war, he cried. And he couldn't put up with it, you know. He was just a little too depressed about what happened, what he went through. He went through Cassino, the Italian war in Cassino. That was the worst murder stuff that happened. Was terrible. So, but, you know, and I kept going with my life, and I tried to be as courageous as I could.
Yeah, understood, Margarita. Thank you. I wanted to ask you about that shortly, as a matter of fact. I would love to know, Margarita, where were you when you found out that the war ended?
I remember I was at home. I have a picture here in my house. And everybody came out of the house. Everybody started singing, running, dancing, everything you can imagine. We went walking in Valentino Park. People just rejoiced for everything, you know. That was a long war, very long.
Yes, yes, indeed. My next question, Margarita, sort of incorporated what you said a minute ago. I believe it was in 1946 you came to the United States. Is that correct?
Yeah, yes.
Okay, great. I'd love to know, what were some of those initial challenges you faced as a young woman and a mother in a foreign land?
Oh, my God. I came here. Can you imagine? I took 4 years of English in Italy. And then when I came here, I couldn't speak a word of it. And it was very hard. Everything was very hard. You know, I learned how to speak English more after my husband died. I had to work. I had to take care of my 4 children, you know. And I did the best I could to learn. And finally, you know, being there, I couldn't work for nobody because I didn't ride. I opened up my own shop in the basement of the house. And then I finally opened up a store, and I never worked for nobody. I learned in Italy how to do clothing. I was a dresser. I used to make patterns and everything. I worked for a designer in Torino. And I kind of pick up on that. And when everything went wrong, I start in that business that I learned when I was very young. And I make pattern, I do everything. So I just open up a store, and that's it. I never worked for nobody, and I got better and better and better. So I open up a store, the tailoring, alteration, and design. When I married my husband, he took me to America here, and we went to a town north of Santa Barbara. Builton is the name. And I cried a lot because, you know, I left Torino, Italy. It's the most beautiful city in this earth. You know, fountain and treasure and museum and everything. And when I got to Builton, there was only a my husband had a restaurant on the 101 highway. And my house was next door to the restaurant, and across the street was a couple of, across the 101 highway was only a couple of stores and station for the cars and stuff like that. But the rest of it was all dry hills, nothing. And I have nobody to talk to. I couldn't speak to nobody in Italian. My husband didn't speak even Italian. We did everything sign language, you know. That was incredible. You know, my husband gave me some money. He told me, say, go across the highway and go buy some food. And I went to buy some food. I put it in a bag, and there was a lot of can. And I was thinking, what would the American do? They eat stuff in a can. In Italy, we had no can at that time. So I put it in the purse. I went home. And I opened up one can, and I taste with a teaspoon, and I didn't like the feeling, the food. And so, but in Italy, you know, we save everything. So I took the can, and I saved the food, and I put it in the fridge. That I said, maybe when Richard come home, he's going to eat it. So when he came home, he looked in the fridge. That he said, where is the can of that stuff? Show it to me. And I went to get it, and it was cat food.
Wow.
So he told everybody in the restaurant, he says, my wife I married, from Italy, great cook and everything, but she had me fast cat food.
Wonderful. That's funny. I'd love to know, Margarita, what was it that prompted you to write your book, Marissa's Courage?
Oh, because I took in California, I took the creative writing school.
Okay.
The creative writing school. And the teacher asked me, he said, how do you write all this stuff? Where did you get the idea of all these things you write? I said, because I went through it. I was writing about my war, you know. And so he got very serious. He took me aside and he said to me, you just better write a book because this is incredible what you're talking about. So that's why it inspired me. Then I found my daughter, and my daughter knew a guy that worked at the airport in Phoenix, and he wanted to write a book. So he came to my house, and he listened to the story, and he decided to help me. So he was my co-writer. So I tell him all the story, and he wrote it for me. That's what happened.
Excellent. And this was, apologize if I mispronounced the name, Bill Dykman?
Yes.
Excellent.
Yes. He was very happy to help me, you know, because his idea, he wanted to be a writer, but he never did.
Dykman. So what was the process like working with him then, documenting and publishing your story? I'd love to hear about it.
The process. He would come over.
Oh, yeah. He would come. It took us about a year. You know, he came over, and every time he came for about a half hour, an hour. So I give him some more idea, you know. And he write down everything I told him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Then we recorded. And then I sent the book to Italy, and now they're printing the book over there. And my friend in Florence, Italy, he translated my book in Italian. So now they have it over there.
And wonderful.
Lots of people like the Italian translation really good.
Excellent.
I still have a bad foot that I got when I was running on my bicycle, and I still have.
How'd that happen?
I was running for shelter when the bombing was coming down, and I fell all the way down into the shelter. I left the bicycle, I ran down, and I broke my foot.
Wow. I lied. I have one question left, if I may. As you reflect on your life and, of course, the times that you lived through, Margarita, I'd love to know, what lessons would you like to pass on to future generations?
What I feel about the war. Oh, my God. I cannot say it the way I feel. I wish I could use my feeling to make them stop. You know, it is incredibly impossible that we are human, because human people are not supposed to do what they're doing now. And, you know, they're trying to destroy this whole earth. It's beautiful, you know, it's rounded, beautiful trees, a lot of nice things. But people don't look at that, you know. Some people are very sick in the mind and they want to fight. And, you know, domestic violence, I think, is domestic violence between family. But this is a domestic violence between nation. Don't you think so? Isn't it?
Yeah. I would agree.
It's a domestic violence between nations, you know, and they are not finding the way to stop. You know, I always picture a table, a round table, with all the head of the nation sitting there nice, talking to each other and having a drink, and then decide what to do without killing people.
Right.
You think
that's the dream. One day.
That's the dream, okay? There's no way that people cannot. If a pair of shoes don't fit, you're going to buy another one. So you have to figure it out. You don't have to go kill people to be able to find the right shoes, you know? I don't get it. To me, it's not human. Sometimes, if I tell you the truth, I am ashamed to be human.
Mm.
Would you believe that? Because a cat is more gentle than a human.
I think I would agree with you.
Okay.
Sadly.
I think it's not okay. They say Russia. No, Russia. It's the leader. It's not Russia. Some people in Russia, they're doing their own thing. They're doing their daily life, you know, raise their children, do everything. It's one person who ordered this. Poor people, get together. Let's go kill everybody.
Yes.
Why? Why do they have to do that? Who gives the permission to that only person to do that without being punished? Usually they don't end up very good because Mussolini end up upside down, you know.
Right, right.
Hitler end up pretty bad, but we still have a sickness. We still have a disease. It's, to me, is a history. They want to be powerful. They want to know that they are the biggest one, that they decide everything for everybody, which is not true. It's not, that's not the way it is. You know, it's not Russia, Italy, France, or this or that. No. If they decide a war, it's the leader that decides. It's the, what do you call that, politics. Too many, too much politics. Too many people deciding. They even fight between each other, their politics. You know, it's not really a good politics when they fight with each other, you know.
Right.
You know, democratic and this and that and that. You know, what else can be put in to help?
I completely agree.
Life is so simple. It'd be so simple if you don't have all these extra things that we have to worry about, these people that they want to be ahead of everything. They're not going to make it anyway. You know, they're just like us. We all have to die. We have a very short time in this life. Only me that I end up to 97. but otherwise, life is short. And look at that. We have a war. We have family war. We have family diseases. People that die for not war, for regular disease, your body. You know, some people die young. You know, we should all have opportunity to die old, to stick around for a while. But some poor people, their life is cut so short.
Yes.
You know, my daughters, I lost two daughters. You know, they were fed up with everything, so they decided to drink themselves to death.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah. So it's something that I would never be able to understand.
Thank you both so much.
Thank you. And I hope you live a long life.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Thank you. I'm honored. I appreciate you saying that. I hope I do as well.
Be happy. Ciao, bella.
Thanks for listening to this episode. If you'd like to support Eyewitness History, the easiest way to do that would be to subscribe to the show on the podcast player of your choice and leave a review. For more information on Eyewitness History, along with show notes and links to resources, go to ParthenonPodcast.com, where you can also listen to some other great podcasts by the Parthenon Podcast Network, such as Scott Rank's History Unplugged, Steve Guerra's History of the Papacy, James Early's Key Battles of American History, and Richard Lim's This American President, along with many others. Thank you.
The Historical Jesus Podcast is the sweeping saga of the life and times of Galilean Jesus of Nazareth, as well as the faith, religion, and church founded to honor and disseminate his acts and teachings. Join me, Mark Vinette, on this fascinating journey through time, exploring the many great works of Christian theology, literature, architecture, music, and art inspired by the words and deeds of Jesus Christ.